The University of Detroit Mercy presents another brand new episode of Ask the Professor. Today's program was recorded using Zoom video conferencing technology.
The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with the University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. He always looks very easy. In his easy chair, it's Professor Jim Tubbs.
Feeling fairly easy. How about you?
Fairly easy. It's something about weather like we've had recently breaking and the humidity going back to being manageable. Suddenly, it's kind of like real summer.
You know, I think the wavering weather that we had throughout the spring, well, for one thing, it made spring start earlier and it lasted longer. And we had more blooms than we've ever had in the spring since I've lived here, at least.
Yeah, I agree.
It was pretty amazing.
Yep. Professor Heather Hill is here with us today. It's been a while since I asked you, Heather, about how does your garden grow?
It's growing well, I think. I dug up the whole front berm and put flowers in.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it's a start, you know, working on it.
Do you have to water every day in weather like this?
Every other day.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Yeah, it depends, though, how much sun stuff gets and so forth. So,
Leslie said to me the other day, Heather, Matt, this is the time of year that you always bring up, I wish we planted sunflowers, and I tell you it's too late, and then we don't talk about it again for another year. I'm like, thanks for having both sides of the conversation for me.
What marriage is all about.
So sad. So sad. Professor Stephen Manning is again here with us today.
Hello.
What's shaking, Stephen?
Well, there's far less lawn for me to mow, which is a good thing.
Sure.
Because of all the planting, so.
Yeah. After the negotiating of all the little shapes and crevices are a little trickier, that's all.
Yep.
It's a classic move. I've noticed more and more and more over time, people just replacing their front lawn with creeping ivy or a gigantic garden or just rocks or something, you know?
Yep.
It's very hard to mow rocks.
Never mind.
Professor Beth Oljar is here with Visitor.
Yes. Well,
oh my gosh, that cat is in heaven right now.
Yeah, she's getting the head leavened, so she's, you know, but their cheeks and the tops of their heads, as Mara will confirm, are particularly places where they like to get rubbed.
Oh my gosh.
Who
this
does?
Cat's eyes were like squinting as if it was just going straight to heaven.
She's on her way to Blissville. We're blissing her out here.
She often seems like she's on her way to Blissville.
She's pretty
catnip talking.
I think that's probably why she fell out of her bed. She's chewing on her catnip tea bags and then she gets all messed up, you know, so.
Oh my gosh.
Next thing I know, I look over and she's like half flopped out of the bed. And
in the spirit world.
Professor Dave Chow is here with us today. So Dave, am I to understand the pad for your new garage is poured and ready to go, huh?
It is poured. It's hardening up even as we speak. So far, so good. Tomorrow, the concrete guys come and carve it up. And then the garage gets built soon.
Unbelievable.
It is like our street is like construction haven right about now. So
yes, it is. I know our neighbors just love us to death.
Oh, yeah. And I've also got construction guys that show up at 6:59 on the dot and start moving.
Well, I wouldn't have blamed him if it was the last couple weeks, Dave, because the old adage is get started before the sun comes up. And the sun was already up by 6:59 on most days.
But man, I'm also noticing you're not the only person that wakes up like at the crack of dawn. I've got other neighbors that are like, oh, it doesn't bother us one bit. We're up at that time. I'm going, am I the only guy that wakes up at noon?
Yes.
Well, most people don't stay up until like 3 or 4 in the morning, Dave. So,
It's my vampirism, that's all.
Dave Chow is not like most people. Not at all.
The night owl.
Could be worse.
Professor Stephanie Conant is here with us today.
Hello.
So kids are all out of school by this point.
today was like sign yearbooks day. I'm like, oh, good.
Doesn't rubber stamp.
Mm-hmm. What is it? We used to do things like field day or like backloaded field trip.
Yep. Go to Belle Isle.
So tomorrow's the last day. That's awesome.
Yeah.
A victory for parents and educators and educator parents everywhere.
Yes. And I took next week off.
You are so wise.
I'm going to go away for a few days and then I'm going to not answer email for a few more days.
That sounds great. I knew this would be a bad time to bring up the 10 things I'm supposed to be talking to you about. I'll wait till after your trip.
Yeah, right.
Professor Mara Livesey is rounding out our cast for today.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. We have not been visited by one of your furry home dwellers yet.
Yeah, where Jupiter is.
In the back.
You know.
Jumped off the perch a little while ago.
Oh, okay.
I think we have one. If I move you a little bit, feel a little like cubby.
Ah, yes.
Someone is in there.
Got it. It's sort of like, I see the sun there. It's sort of like some sort of cooking box. They're staying warm or something.
Yes.
The kitty microwave, right?
Cozy box.
Finding those rays of sunshine.
Oh, my gosh. Folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send us the questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. Find us on Facebook or Instagram, or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. When last we left our heroes, we were plowing through some awesome questions all over the map from Kimberly Richards, and we've got a few more of those we can get through. Always a good time with Kimberly sending us these questions. What does a funambulist do? F-U-N-A-M-B-U-L-I-S-T. What does a funambulist do?
The party planner.
Walks funny.
Okay, so it's not a party planner, but walking, Jim has noticed A-M-B in the middle, and so, you know, to amble about. It does have something to do with walking in a very specific way.
Pigeon-toed.
Mm-mm. Like the Ministry of Silly Walks.
I was just thinking.
Yeah, me too. Funambulist.
Skipping? Mushrooms. Walking mushrooms?
What if I said that this is probably something that one of the Walenda family would do?
Tightrope walking.
Wire walking?
It's tightrope walking. Yes, tightrope walking. Oh. Sadly, the Walendas...
It wasn't so fun for them, not always.
Yes. They lost one of their children in an event that happened in the city of Detroit, Michigan during the 60s, if I remember correctly. Yeah. Okay. Which pizza chain, and it is a chain, is credited with inventing deep dish pizza?
Pizza Hut?
Not Pizza Hut.
Domino's?
Jets?
No.
Is Pizza Popolis locally? I mean, that's the famous one. But
sure, but I would say Pizza Popolis, honestly, modeled their product after this very famous chain from Chicago.
Geno's?
Mm-mm. Not Buddy's.
Pizza mm-hmm. One.
Pizza Uno.
There we go.
There we go.
Heather got it. It's Pizzeria Uno is
Pizzeria
the one.
Uno. Oh.
They used to have a little more, I don't know what you want to call it, a presence in the metro area. It's kind of bowed out. I mean, Detroit has a lot of things that a lot of other metro areas don't have. Mm-hmm. We don't really need more pizza.
Well, we've got Buddies. So, I mean.
Come on.
Who cares?
Detroit style is perfecto. But deep dish in the way that we know it was basically, it would have been between the early 40s and the mid 50s. So it's actually relatively new. Mm-hmm. Where?
Eat lasagna.
I'm laughing inside because we'll take my dad out to Buddy's and the waiter, waitress will come around the table and you, sir. And every single time he orders mustachali, I am not joking. I'm like, you could make this at home for 17 cents. Yeah. Get the pizza.
And it's not super Chicago style deep dish. I mean, right. It's square, but it's, right. You know, recognizably pizza.
It's right. Not Giordano's, no.
Right, right. Where was the coldest temperature ever recorded in North America? Where?
Somewhere in Canada.
Partial credit on somewhere in Canada.
Yellowknife?
You're very close without actually getting there. It was actually in the Yukon in Canada. Yukon. Yeah. The name of the small hamlet was Snag. What a great name, Snag. The temperature reached a bone-freezing negative 81 February 3rd, 1947. And that was not calculated with wind chill.
Matt, my brother keeps the weather information for Yakutsk, Siberia on his phone, so he can always see in the winter what it is there, because it's usually in the negative double digits.
It's that psychological turn, right, Jim? It's like, oh, this doesn't feel that bad.
I'm better than that. Yes,
in Siberia. Oh my gosh! In which city did the Beatles perform their last concert, 29 of August, 1966?
San Francisco.
Yeah. Yes.
Yep.
And they had to be taken away in an armored truck off the field because of the swarming people.
Yep. FYI, it was at good old Candlestick Park in San Francisco. Fans paid between $450 and $650 per ticket to see that concert.
Wow.
Whoa.
Sheesh. Wow is the only thing to say.
And the Beatles just couldn't wait to get out of there.
Yep.
Like, can you blame them? I mean, the interesting thing to think about is they couldn't possibly have heard each other play.
Right.
In the crappy PA systems.
Yep.
And think of how tight they sound.
Yep.
Nonetheless, right?
Mm-hmm. FYI, they started at 9:27 p.m. local time. And performed exactly 11 songs, no encore, and then were carted away. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, that's $450 to $650 in 1966 dollars, you know?
It's like about a $5 concert.
There's a really good movie about their touring years called 8 Days a Week that Ron Howard made. It's I can't blame them for getting tired of touring.
I don't understand how Ringo ever heard them in those big arenas. The stadiums where they played. How did he ever keep up with them?
Because he's Ringo Starr. I mean, those guys were unbelievably tight. That's what happens when you had to play as much as they did in Hamburg.
Well, he said he had to watch George's leg because he tapped his foot to the beat that they were doing. And that's how Ringo followed along with them.
Wow. But they were pretty in sync with each other musically. They would have.
Yes, they were. Remarkably.
Thank God.
Professors, what gives flamingo birds their trademark pink color?
Shrimps.
Yeah, you know, they're born gray, and when they start eating all of that wonderful seafood, that's what turns them pink.
Seriously?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like seafood too, but...
It's the pigment in the shells of the fruit.
Oh, that's absolutely right.
Like if you eat too many carrots, you turn a little bit orange.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
Or if you get a little
potatoes.
Good to know.
If you get a little
A lot of carrots, but it can happen.
My great nephew would eat nothing but strained sweet potatoes and he began turning orange.
Yeah.
My. Oh, my. Okay. In which state in these great United States did the first drive-in movie theater open in 1933?
Ohio.
Kansas.
It's a Midwest.
New Jersey. Area.
Pennsylvania.
No, I can tell you it's actually East Coast.
Oh.
Massachusetts.
Sense, but
Connecticut.
New York State.
Oh. Maryland.
Delaware.
Delaware.
Virginia. Maine. New Hampshire.
Connecticut.
It was Jersey, professors. It was New Jersey.
You said New Jersey.
I'm sorry.
My first answer.
I'm sorry. Point to Stephanie.
We need the UDM map. We need to be back in the studio again. That's what we need.
Yeah. Before you even said East Coast, I said New Jersey.
My bad.
I'm sorry.
You're bad.
The story goes that the inspiration of the gentleman who invented, quote unquote, drive-in movies was his mother, who found it difficult to sit comfortably in a traditional movie theater seat. She liked her car.
The car seat better?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah.
Or she sat in the back of a pickup truck, so.
You're listening to a special edition of Ask the Professor, in which the 8 professors participating in this recording session were connecting to each other from different locations, thanks to Zoom video conferencing technology. We're grateful to those listeners who submitted questions for today's show, and we welcome your questions at atp@udmercy.edu. Now, let's return to our host, Matt Mayo, with more questions for the panel.
And we've got questions from Kimberly Richards. This is perfectly well-timed. Does anybody remember who tried on New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft's Super Bowl ring and just so happened to never give it back to him?
Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, it was Vladimir Putin. It's such a great piece of trivia.
Got him. He was looking so pouty and sulky when he was photographed with Biden because, you know, now he's got somebody telling him, you better knock this off.
Or right, right. Oh, my gosh. So basically, Kraft says, I put my hand out and Putin put it in his pocket. Three KGB guys got around him and they walked out of the room. I don't know what to say.
This is mine now.
He's a thug. This is hardly surprising.
When you see him riding a horse, come on.
I know. I'm shirtless.
But he's not into that macho stuff. That's not part of Russia's political culture.
Right.
Just told Kirsten.
Not his fault. He was photographed American topless in jeans on a horse.
Yeah.
Hockey in those rec leagues?
It was on the radio this morning that looked like they had booked two people to do point counterpoint on this summit today. And the person's like, well, you know, they were clearly trying to go after Joe Biden. You know, he did call him a killer. That was the word. And the super duper sort of like Hunt for Red October analysis guy's like, no, Putin loves that. He loves it when people call him a killer. Like that shows respect. I'm like, this is going to be a fun day in politics. Jeez.
Or when he told Putin 10 years ago, I look into your eyes and I don't see a soul at all. Who said, we understand each other.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay, how about this one? Let's switch gears, but not too far. On which side of a building do icicles most likely form?
The south.
We're talking about the northern hemisphere?
Yeah, I believe we're talking about northern hemisphere.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
So it says south is most likely. Icicles are a product of sun's warmth melting snow. A melted drop begins to slide off the edge of the roof and then freezes in the surrounding cold air. An icicle starts to form from just a few frozen droplets. Once it reaches a certain size, the drops begin to drip down the sides. They're more likely to form on the south side because that's the sun's strongest rays shining from the south in the winter.
Okay.
This is not a joke at all. I had breakfast with my 9-year-old son this morning. We were talking about the solstice coming up, and I gave him, he actually had a toy that was sort of a dome shape. And I said, well, you know, the sun doesn't just go right up the middle of the dome of the sky every day. It sort of like makes these loops that go closer and closer to the horizon. And I'm like doing science dad. And I look up and Emmett's got the toast with the butter side directly against the side of his face, like nodding. Like,
what?
That's great. That's great. Fantastic.
Oh, boy.
I wish I was making it up. Moving on.
He was so intrigued, he forgot he had toast in his hand, and he was just...
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy.
How many hearts will a dissection reveal inside the body of an octopus?
Three.
Yeah, it's three hearts. Three hearts. Two pump blood exclusively through the animal's gills, while the third one maintains blood circulation. That's pretty interesting.
I believe we recommended that octopus documentary several weeks ago.
Well, you recommended it to me, I remember. Because I told you I was doing my own shark week at home.
So. My octopus teacher.
I don't think that factoid was in there, but we heard about it some other place.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. Another definitional one here, professors. We're looking for what exactly is a stone chat. STONECHAT, one word. What's a stone chat?
Is this like Vinegar Valentine again?
It's in that wheelhouse. I can tell you, because it sort of sounds that way, that it's kind of a British thing.
Is it a cat?
It's an animal, but it's not a cat.
Is it a fox?
It is not a fox.
The unicorn.
Although we need a few more of those in Berkeley to control the dang rabbit population. Holy smoke.
No, it's just hearing them scream is awful. I mean, it's unpleasant.
No, that's true. That is also true.
Stone chat.
Is it a kind of bird?
Stonechat is. It's a little bird. It's a little bird of the British Isles. Actually, very interesting. It's one of the very few insect-eating birds that does not migrate. And so that's how they maintain their insectless ecosystem during the winter in Britain. A stonechat. They haunt the moors at night. What can I say?
The moors. Ooh.
Mary Tyler.
No, they're eaten by werewolves.
What iconic actor from the 30s, 40s, and 50s had the birth name Leonard Franklin Sly? Not eventually became a fast food symbol for a short time.
Jimmy Dean?
No. Passed away in 1998 at the age of 86.
Roy Rogers?
It was Roy Rogers, yeah. The King of the Cowboys, they used to call him. Yep. Jim, I'm not making this up. There was a short-lived fast food chain, Roy Rogers, right?
Yes.
Isn't that the little boy equivalent of a Shirley Temple?
No. Oh, is it really?
Yeah, so if the girl orders a Shirley Temple and the boy orders a Roy Rogers.
For real?
Ah, oh, that sounds right.
I wonder what happens if a little boy orders a Rob Roy. I wonder what would happen there.
Nap. They get a nap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
not
awesome.
My choice.
Who was the stapler originally invented for? I'll give you a hint that it was the 18th century and it was invented
for Beth.
For someone. Oh, the it was guy? Invented for Beth many Beth. Years later.
The character in The Office.
No, it was before
office
that.
Space. Office space. That's what I was trying to think of.
You say 1800s?
18th century.
Benjamin Franklin?
No.
The clergy?
Who was it invented for? Or what was it invented for?
Who was it invented for?
We're talking about a specific person, not like a group of people.
Right, a person.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
A person or a profession?
A person.
Thomas Jefferson.
Louis XVI while he still had his head.
George Washington.
Well, I gotta give Jim partial credit. It was Louis XV
actually
the stapler was invented before.
Oh. Yeah.
So the idea
was. He had a lot of papers.
He had a lot of papers, and they were just. We all remember this transition that we went through, moving away from having a wax affixed to the back of our letters and envelopes.
Yes, I remember this.
Like it was yesterday.
So yeah, basically somebody invented it for him to take care of his papers. And each staple was inscribed with the insignia of the royal court.
Yeah. Ooh.
Whoa.
Beth, that's something you got to aspire to.
Someone should try to push a PO through Detroit Mercy with like, you know, these staples are inscribed with the insignia of the royal court.
I think Elaine would say no without even reading it.
What is the name of the fruit commonly known as star fruit simply because of its shape?
Carambola.
Yeah, carambola. It's a popular variety of fruit packed with nutrients and minerals. The name comes from the distinct shape of the fruit. While it's cut in cross-section, you see the shape of a star. Let's see, used in cooking, relishes, preserves, and juice drinks. Lots of different possibilities here. One last question from Kimberly. Thanks so much for sending these in, Kimberly. What strange objects appeared around the Gulf of Ob, O-B, in Siberia during winter 2016?
UFOs?
It wasn't UFOs.
Strange.
Did they wash ashore?
Let's see. I can tell you that they formed naturally. They were very unusual and were likely an environmental phenomenon.
Were they balls of ice?
They were balls of snow. That's right. Yeah exactly. They were giant, as a matter of fact. They were rolled into perfect spheres by wind and water currents. Although the exact type of weather and environmental mix needed for the balls to form isn't clear, most experts agree it was likely a combination of ice formation, temperatures, and ocean currents.
How big were they?
It doesn't say, but it does use the word giant. So I'm thinking, I don't know, 5 feet, 6 feet. You could walk up to it and knock on it like a door, you know?
Like snowman quality.
Yeah, exactly.
Or 30, and you might get rolled on it and squished, rolled under it.
I'm wondering whether considering it said 2016, the phenomena isn't tied to the end of human civilization, since people are saying that the more that the ground warms up, the more that viruses that haven't existed for millions of years are being defrosted, mostly from Siberia.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's hope it's just playful snowballs and not the end of human civilization.
I Googled what they looked like. They're like twice a basketball.
Oh, that's pretty big.
They're like,
okay, that's good.
Catapult worthy.
Okay, we're going to go back to the imponderables list. We've got just a couple minutes left. And this is pretty laser focused, but I think we can have some fun with it. What is your, it says favorite potato chip flavor. I know people are pretty protective of just like, is it straight up potato chip or is there a flavored chip that you like?
Barbecue.
No flavors for me.
No flavors for Steven, but Jim likes barbecue.
Sour cream and chive isn't bad, but I'm kind of a straight up girl too.
I agree with plain, but must be a kettle chip.
Ah, yes.
Yep.
Yeah, they're good.
That extra crunch.
Better Made's low sodium ones are actually really, or lightly salted or whatever, are really good.
They are pretty good. And do we count my favorite, the rainbow chips, the super starchy ones, as regular, or is it, you know?
There's a burnt.
Yeah.
Hey, I mean, my dream came true. It's been a few months, but Cheez-It now has basically a heavily toasted version. And I'm like, we might be starting a trend here.
Better Made has a good sweet heat barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go off the board here. Salt and vinegar.
That's good.
Depends on the brand.
Better Made.
Better Made's are good.
Bad. Lay's aren't too that bad. Now, has anybody here tried the Meyer brand steak and onions?
Oh my gosh.
No.
It tastes like steak and onions. It's like whoever, God love you chemist, okay? But whoever made the... That recipe for that thing is like, wonderful stuff.
I don't know if Trader Joe still has these or not. I hadn't thought about these in a while, but they have like they used to have a potato chip that's just like pepper. It's just like pepper.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? They're not.
Cracked pepper, yeah.
Yeah, cracked pepper. They're really
good. Yep. That's not bad.
But yeah, in our household, we're not allowed to get anything but plain chips.
Oh.
Go rogue. Go rogue.
Not allowed. What?
It's a sacred event in the life of all Detroiters to find a place. Like I know a number of you have been to Ernie's, but you find that party store that for whatever reason, they stock every variety of Better Made. And you go in there and see things you've never even seen before, like dill pickle and stuff like that, and really enjoy it.
I miss in New England, there's Wise.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With the little owl on there. Yeah,
absolutely.
Now, I found out that Better Made discontinued the green onion ones too.
Huh.
Those I would probably like.
They don't have them anymore.
Well.
Well,
it's over for you, Beth.
Professors, I'll let you ponder more about chips, but I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today. So the time has come to say goodbye, Mara.
See ya.
Stephanie.
Bye.
Dave.
See ya.
Beth.
Goodbye.
Steven.
Bye.
Heather.
Bye-bye.
And Jim.
Farewell.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.